Here's a quote from George T. Simon's book, The Big Bands, one of the go-to resources regarding swing-era personalities. Some band leaders were completely devoted to the music, others entirely to the money it could bring. Some possessed great talent, others possessed none. Some really loved people, others merely used them. Some were daring, others stodgily conservative, and some were motivated by their emotions, others by a carefully calculated course of action. End quote. Welcome to episode 26 of our Jazz Backstory podcast. Our first few episodes of season 4 focus on band leaders, all of whom had various levels of talent, daring, devotion, and people skills. In episode 25, we heard heartfelt testimonials from a number of musicians proclaiming Duke Ellington as King of the Hill, A number one, top of the heap. I'm guessing that a portion of our listeners are saying, wait a minute, not so fast. What about Count Basie? I'm among them. For pure swing, dynamics, and excitement, I'm a Basie guy. I love his recordings, and I borrow his classic ending, plink, 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 multiple times on every gig. But first things first. I promised to start this episode with the conclusion of Clark Terry's story from episode 25. A quick synopsis. In 1951, Clark Terry was a member of Basie's short-lived sextet. Duke Ellington desired Mr. Terry's trumpet talents for his band. Clark was ready for a change of scenery and the offer of better bread. But there was an unwritten leaders and sidemen protocol to follow. We pick up the story from the spot where Clark has informed Basie that he needs some time off.
Put my nose in. I said, Basie, I'm just not feeling good. I just need to go home and just get off. Say, yeah, okay. Say, well, when you get yourself together, you come on back because, you know, this is always home for you. So I said, thanks. I appreciate it very much. I left and went with the band. I stayed with the band for almost 10 years, you know. And years later, I went to the Carnegie Hall when Basie was already sick and he had to take the little side elevator to ride up. Uh-huh. This is before they installed the thing that they got there now. And I went backstage to see him and I'm standing up at the top and he's coming up. I said, Holy, you know one thing? He said, yeah. So what's that? I said, I have a confession to make to you. Something that's been bugging me for years and years. Yeah. So what is it? I said, when I left the band, you know, and told you I was sick, you know, going home, I said, I wasn't really sick. He said, He said, the reason I did that is because Duke had made me an offer I couldn't pass up. He said, He said, why do you think I took the raise back? You think I didn't know that? He took me.
All these years, he'd been bugged. But Basie knew it all the time. Very little got by him. The life of big band sidemen and leaders was not an easy one. In addition, in the 30s and 40s, there was a distinct difference between the day-to-day schedules of the white bands and the black bands, an inequality that extended into the commercial music world as well. Basie alum Harry Sweets Edison spoke about the motivation and necessity of embracing the vagabond lifestyle.
In my era, as you know, there was a lot of prejudice toward the musicians because we couldn't play in a studio band. They had radio bands that were getting paid weekly. They were on a salary. They had musicians here at Fox Studio, MGM, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. They were on the staff, and they got paid whether they worked or played. Mm-hmm. But they didn't have black musicians there at the time. So our only course was to play solos. And that was the only way that you could exist, you know, is play jazz. Because there was no place for us to play, but and dance halls. I joined Count Basie in 1938, and we used to do like 300 one-nighters a year.
Wow.
You know, where Benny Goodman and one of those bands would be in a hotel 6 months in New York, and the hotel in Chicago for 3 months. You know, they always were on. They were always sitting someplace where they could play ball or whatever they wanted to do. They could be with their families, you know. But we had to take to the road. But those trumpet players in those days, Wendell Cully, I imagine you remember the pretty solo he played on Little Darling with Count Basie.
Yeah, he was talking about that section that he was in.
Yes, he was from Boston, and one of the finest students Schlossberg had. And his ambition was to play on the Boston Pops because he was from Boston. But he ended up with Noble Sissle. He couldn't get a job. You know, they didn't hire black musicians in symphony bands in those days. So we all ended up doing one-nighters. You know, we'd pass each other on the road going to Birmingham, Texas, Mississippi. We played every nook and corner in the United States.
The Basie Band grew out of the Kansas City-based Benny Moten Orchestra and played their first gigs in 1935 and their last with Basie as leader in 1984. In 1950, economic realities caused numerous big bands to fold their tents, and for 2 years Basie survived in the business with six members instead of 16. Bassist Jimmy Lewis vividly recalls how the Count could still engage an audience with this pared-down band.
Is this when Basie had the small group?
Yes, small group. Yeah, small group. We had Wardell Gray, Clark Terry, Gus Johnson on drums, Freddie Green on guitar, me on bass, and we used Buddy Franco.
Can I read something that that Joe Williams said about that group?
Okay,
he says, I worked with them at the Brass Rail when he had Clark Terry, Wardell Gray, Buddy DeFranco, and in the rhythm section, Freddie Green, Jimmy Lewis, and Gus Johnson.
Yeah.
Talk about swinging. They'd get into some things that would swing you into bad health.
You know, he'd come on the bandstand, he'd sing these little love songs, you know. Just, you know, it's real sweet, and then you walk off the stand, you know. I said, wonder why Basie like him so well, you know. And so I asked Basie one day, I said, Basie, what are you seeing Joe Williams? He said, you just wait. He said, I see something that maybe nobody else sees. He said, but that man can sing. I said, okay. So I stayed with Basie, and we worked the Brass Rail down the loop. We opened up in one night, and all the people were sitting at the tables, all, you know. And so Basie and I start off real soft. We start playing soft, you know. I thought, so I'm playing louder than anybody. I've been used to playing like that. Basie, don't play so loud. They said, they'll hear you. So I cut down the bass. And Basie set a tempo, and then he watched the people's feet. He said, okay. So everybody's patting their feet, even though they're holding a conversation. He said, now, Gus, pick up your sticks. Gus was playing with brushes then. He said, pick up your sticks. Say, we got them now. And we'd make a thing sound like a 16-piece band. And Freddie Green, boy, he's like a metronome sitting there. And you couldn't get away from him, but you might get the tempo might move up a little bit, you know, I get excited. And Freddie said, come back here, right here. And boy, that thing would take off to like a, but he'd sit there and give signs. You know, he had all kinds of signs. He'd do his face, you know, when he wants you to play louder, softer, you know, and when he get ready to close the number, he'd double his fist, you know. Mm-hmm. And like if he wanted some excitement, he'd stand up on the piano and look at you, you know. And boy, and Gus would start on the drums. You hear the thing, it sound like it's coming up out of the floor. And boy, the people just went crazy.
How come the people went crazy? Well, Basie set them up. He knew that music at a low volume tends to make people listen harder, even if they're not aware they're doing so. Think about it. There's no such thing as loud unless there is a soft for contrast. Seek out Basie's recording of All of Me for a perfect demonstration. As hip as it was, six musicians was not enough for Count Basie. Before long, he was back with a powerhouse group that became known as the New Testament Band. His intuitive sense of tempo, time, and dynamics kept these 16 men swinging. We'll call once again on Clark Terry and Joe Williams.
Well, I tell you about this cat, about Basie. He, although Ellington was more endowed with the harmony and theory and so forth, Basie was the king of mother wit as far as tempo. And he taught us all the greatest lesson in the world, and that is the utilization of space and time. All the musicians in the world. And they say he learned it through the medium of his socializing at Kansas City in the Cherry Blossom, the little place where he would have people sit, small room like this, but every table had gingham tablecloth, and he'd play a little bit with Joe Jones and Big and Walter Page and the Freddie or the fiddler, whoever was there. And he'd play a little bit, and he'd go socializing. Bing, ba-ding, over and socialize. Yeah, baby, how you doing, sir? Bing, ba-ding, over here and have another taste over here and have two or three tastes in a row. Meanwhile, Joe Jones and Big and still go, ching, boom, boom, and he'd come back, bling, be-doo, bling, be-doo, so forth and so on. So he was so endowed with rhythm and utilization of space and time, so he knew exactly the way a tune should be before you played it. Now, the one best example of that is that when Neil Hefti was writing for the band,
right,
he brought in a tune and passed it out, and Basie played it, so he Basie shook his head. He said, "What's the matter? You don't like the arrangement, Chief?" He said, "Well, what's wrong with it?" He said, "Tempo." So he said, "Well, the tune was about here." So he said, "Well, what do you think it should be?" "About here." "Well, the tune was
cute.
That was the tune." He brought it in. He brought it in to be. But Basie heard it. He heard it. Right away, he said, "Here's where it goes." And look at the results. If he had kept it up there, it'd just been another also ran tune.
And you talk about stealing from himself.
Yeah,
I mean that cute.
Oh yeah.
He was the king of space and time. Yes, he was.
We learned a lot from him.
Like Clark Terry, trombonist Grover Mitchell was a sideman with both Ellington and Basie. He adds his observations regarding the Count's impeccable sense of tempo and groove.
Basie had a way of tailoring arrangements to keep it his sound.
Yeah, what he did, a good example of that was Little Darling. When Neil brought Little Darling in, it was supposed to be fast. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. It was da 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 da
da da da. And Basie, oh my Jesus, it's a nice song, but it's terrible and slowed it way. That's how Little Darling got. And there was a couple more he did that way. And he could do just the opposite with something that was maybe would play faster.
Mm-hmm.
He was very good at tempos. Now, you see, he came through that that vaudeville school, you know, with the dancers and all that kind of stuff. And he had really good insight. A lot of sparse piano style came from accompanying dancers, if you can remember how piano players used to accompany tap dancers.
Oh.
So he, this was, you see what I mean? It's just a removal from that and taking advantage of this real sparse musical type of thing with the band. If you can imagine the piano player that had to accompany tap dancers, Basie was a perfect example of that. I saw that little plink here and a plink there got to be part of.
Yeah.
Well, to a great degree, got to be part of what he was doing. He was a vaudevillian, you know.
Basie was a vaudevillian. There's our cue for this episode's jazz vocabulary spot. Vaudeville was an early 20th century style of music hall entertainment that included singers, tap dancers, comedians, jugglers, and animal acts. Aspiring jazz players often paid the bills by playing in the pit for vaudeville shows, where they were expected to have a fine-tuned sense of timing, tempo, and spontaneity. And this is a first, a musician's name as a jazz vocabulary term. Jimmy Lewis spoke of Freddie Green as the sextet member who kept the tempo intact, no speeding up allowed. Freddie Green strummed quarter notes on his acoustic guitar for nearly 5 decades as a member of Basie's All-American Rhythm Section. Just do the Freddie Green is a common directive to big band guitarists. And lastly, have a taste. If you don't know what that means, you must be a teetotaler. And you can Google that term. Playing lead trumpet with the Count Basie Band was a coveted gig. No one filled the chair better than Snooky Young. From our 1996 interview, here's Snooky chatting with fellow trumpeter Gerald Wilson.
Gee, so I had a great time with Basie's band. I loved his band. I was with him when he disbanded. I was actually with Count Basie when he disbanded.
Was that because of the economics of the time?
Yes.
I foreseen it coming. That's why I split. And that's the truth. I seen it coming in California, and I split. They didn't know where I was, but I had gone home. I mean, I'm a youngster. I didn't pay it no attention. I said, well, I'm going home, you know, pack my bags.
Back there was a Dayton that you went
back to Dayton. Yeah. And stayed for 10 years. Almost a mistake.
Almost.
Almost a mistake. I got out just in time. I will say that. I got out just in time. Because if I'd have stayed another 2 or 3 years, I would have lost the desire to get back into the Fast Company.
Yeah.
You see? And it wasn't easy coming back, I tell you that.
What was the first Fast Company you came back into?
Count Basie?
Yeah.
And that was when he was the hottest.
Yeah.
I mean, his next trip around, the comeback.
Right.
Joe Williams was in the band, you know.
Right.
And
was Clark?
And, that was Thad Jones, Joe Newman, Wendell Carly, myself was the trumpet section.
That's Henry
Coker, Al Gray, and Benny Powell was trombone section. Mm-hmm. And the Reeds was Marshall Royal, baritone, Charlie Folks, Frank West, Frank Foster, and Billy Mitchell. And the rhythm section was, of course, Freddie Green,
Jones.
Eddie Jones, and Sonny Payne, and Count Basie. Mm. And that was his next bad band. And I think
just
so far as compared to his other band, people used to try to compare the bands, but I was in both of them, and I don't think it's fair to compare either one.
They're both great. What was Basie like to work for? Was he
beautiful?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I was lucky. I lived in Count Basie's home with him for about 8 weeks.
All you had to do for Basie is play.
Mm-hmm.
Play, and because he would let you kind of mess up a little bit, but not too much. He didn't want to be, you know what I mean, like cats, some guys overdo it and drinking and whatnot. But he'll let you go on and do that because he liked to taste himself a little bit, you know, from time to time. But he didn't want you to mess up and everything.
So
he was pretty flexible.
Yeah.
He was a nice guy. I love Basie.
Yeah, too. He's a wonderful man.
That's marvelous.
Wonderful man.
All the sporting life people love Basie, too. The racetrack people and all of these kind of people, the hustlers and whatnot. They all love Basie.
He bet on the racehorses all the time. He loved the game. Wow.
They all love Basie, man.
In episode 25, Grover Mitchell described Duke Ellington's hands-off approach to band discipline. Basie was less forgiving with his sidemen.
You walk into Basie's band late, and you walk up on that bandstand, and you know the very fastest solo possible, your cold, you're going to play right then. He had all kinds of ways of punishing you, you know what I mean? Oh, he was just mean. Or some tight solo you know darn well you can't play. Because you haven't warmed up, you know, or some high ballad or something like that, you got to play it right there on the spot. He didn't say anything.
Yeah, he didn't bawl you out.
Yeah, you're messing it up, you know, and he's just sitting over there. If you say anything, they say, well, that's your job. You're supposed to, that's your solo.
A lot to be learned from that.
That's right. Oh, he was something. He was great, though.
Count Basie called vocalist Joe Williams his number one son, and their names will forever be linked in jazz lore. The 1955 LP, Count Basie Swings, Joe Williams Sings, took the band to a whole nother level, and it stayed there. Joe made a practice of watching Basie interact with his sidemen in a manner that nowadays would be identified as positive reinforcement.
As a leader, he was, I watched him, observed him. He never saw mistakes. If something that those of us who knew felt was like, gee, that wasn't what we do 98 times out of 100, you know. That was an accident. That was something that, you know. And so instead of looking where it came from, he'd always be, he happened to be looking someplace else. Hey, somebody over there. You know, you missed it. You never heard it. But when you did something marvelously unusual, he would go. He'd light up like a Christmas tree.
While he was a man of few words, and soft-spoken ones at that, the Count always made it clear what he wanted from his band, on stage, and in the studio. He occasionally called on drummer Ed Shaughnessy for recording work when he wanted a particular sound and style to fit a themed album. Here's Ed with an inside studio story.
Yeah. And
you want to hear a fun story?
Sure do.
I guess you got enough time for a fun story. It'll only take a minute. We come to this studio to make the first album. And we sit down, and we had no dividers between any of the band. Basie did not like to record that way. So therefore, he set the band up almost like real life, you know. It's pretty almost the same as you would on a stage, almost. Mm-hmm. And we start running the first tune down and play it. Kind of a medium tempo tune, nothing real hot. And I'm playing and filling and doing stuff that I normally would do. And he says, I mean, we stop and the engineer says over the thing, the producer wants to talk to you, Count. So Count says, well, talk on the thing. He says, well, do you want to talk over the mic? Count says, yeah, what is it? Come on, let's get going. So the producer leans over the mic. He says, we think the drums should probably be about half as loud as they are. And we think that would be a lot better for this recording. And Basie, who very seldom does this, went, rawr! And hit his fist on the piano. And the whole band went like, rawr! Like this, I swear to God, including me. Scared the crap out of us. He's sitting there with this yachting cap, and he goes, roar! He roared like a lion and went, bang!
Count Basie.
Count Basie, yeah. I mean, I found out later, this is one of his rare moments, because, and he leans over to the mic. Now, after he does this, now he's Mr. Cool. He says, Mr. Shaughnessy's here because I like the way he plays in a big band. Your job is to get it all down on record. He looked at me, he says, play your way.
Oh, wow.
And that was the last time we got a word about in five record dates to make the album, first album. Never a word came from the booth. Wow. And you know something? They got it all down okay. Yeah. I didn't modify anything. But man, that's what it scared the crap out of all of us. It was like, well, you know what? He made the point right in the very beginning, because we were going to make a couple of albums for this company. He made the point that this band is going to play the way it plays. Mm-hmm. We're not going to play studio style where we kind of don't play, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, or we modify everything. Right. Yeah, he wants the fire. The main thing, he wants the fire.
Oh, to be a fly on the wall at that session. We'll wrap up episode 26 with the eminently quotable John Hendricks, who offers one more insight into Count Basie, the man and jazz legend.
And you had quite a wonderful association with Count Basie.
Oh, yeah. It was gorgeous. He was a great man. I mean, he was great in such a quiet way. You know, it wasn't any flamboyance about him. What it was about him, I think, was his magnetism. You know, he just sat still and was quiet, but nothing happened until he moved. I mean, the band would be on the bandstand, and everybody would be sitting there, and he'd come and make that introduction, and the whole band would come to life. You know? Wow. He and Duke Ellington had that same thing, and Basie was so honest. You know, he was such an honest man that it was funny. It was a joke the way he would just let the truth come out of his mouth. Like one time we went to London with him. And he asked me to come by his hotel, you know, because he was going to do an interview with the London Times. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of worried about it, you know, and wanted to make sure that everything went well. Yeah. So he wanted me there in case I had to translate for the reporter. <Yeah. laughs> So this man says, he sits down and he says, tell me, Mr. Basie. he says, you have a style of playing the piano. He says, you don't seem to play too many notes. You're sort of economical in your style of playing. He says, how did you arrive at such a style? And basically said, I just can't play no more piano. And I, of course, was sitting over here talking. And I went into the bathroom and cracked up. Because it was so true,
yeah,
but totally unexpected. Yeah. And then when we saw the article the next day, mm-hmm. the guy remarked on how Mr. Basie was so what did he call it? So modest. Mm. He was so modest. He wasn't modest.
He was
telling the truth. Yeah. You know, the 1 o'clock jump, if you listen to that record, Basie could only play an E-flat.
An E-flat.
When he started out, that was it. E-flat. And that song is in D, you know, when the band comes in. So he plays his two courses in E-flat. Then he makes the modulation to D, and the band plays.
And then he can kind of lay out and just do his thing here and there.
Happily, the Count Basie Orchestra continues to swing. After Basie passed in 1984, the band was skillfully directed first by Thad Jones, then Frank Foster, then Grover Mitchell, all Basie alums. Now led by Scotty Barnhart, the current group just earned a 2024 Grammy Award for the recording, Basie Swings the Blues. That he did, and that he still does. Tune in next week when we'll focus on the musician that spawned more anecdotes and contrasting opinions than any other band leader. I'm speaking of the cat who was crowned the King of Swing. See you on the flip side.